Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And today we are in snowy New Jersey. Of course, it's not always snowy, but it sure is this December. We have had a lot of snow. And that's one of the things that people really have to be aware of with their dogs, making sure that you keep your dog's feet clean when they come in from outside. It's, of course, important when you have your dog coming in from your backyard, but especially important when you're coming in from the street. If you take your dog out in the winter, remember there's all kinds of things that can be not only burning and caustic on your dog's feet and can get up well into the pads of the feet, but also they lick their feet after they come in. So sometimes when your dog goes out and he comes in and he's acting a little funny, he might have just ingested all that road salt and toxic gunk. Same thing is why we don't walk our dogs when we know chemicals or pesticides have been sprayed in the area. We have to be aware that especially certain breeds like Rhodesian Ridgebacks are extremely clean. They're kind of like cats, so clean. Well, they'll be licking their feet. And remember, whatever was on their feet, when they were outside and they come inside, or whatever you're using in your house to clean your floor, especially with the kind of ucky weather we're having, all that stuff, if the dog is going to lick it in and, you know, absorb it, it's going to go into his body. It's almost as if he were ingesting something in food. You know, we're all very aware of, you know, all these recalls, these things from China, foods and all kinds of treats and toys and things that are made overseas. And, you know, unfortunately, the same kind of toxins that we're trying to avoid by buying our food made in the U.S. and making sure that the food is organic or extremely high quality. You know, if you can make sure that it's a really good food, but then you're walking your dog or using cleaning products and exposing him to pesticides and chemicals and things, well, you might as well be feeding him the junky food. I mean, I don't really mean that, but obviously you don't want to feed your dog something that's no good, but yet he's bringing it in on his feet. So that brings me to, why should we be careful with our dogs in the winter? Because especially in the Northeast, especially if you're outside quite a bit, you'll see that the dogs will come in. Some dogs will actually walk around and start licking between, like chewing up into the top of their pads. Now, if you have a dog like a Maltese or a Lab or Goldens or something that tends to have a lot of tufting and feathering on the inside of the pads of its feet, imagine walking on a slippery floor with your socks on. You'd be slipping around too, so sometimes that can cause a dog to even be afraid to walk on a slippery surface. You'll say, oh, my dog won't come into the dining room because we have marble, or my dog won't go into the kitchen, or my dog won't cross, you know, if we're in the street, my dog won't cross over here or over there. The problem is that if you aren't aware of why your dog is doing what it's doing, then how can you change the behavior? If you can't change the things around your dog, then you can't change the dog. It's not magic. It's not something that somebody created. It's canine behavior. It's just the way it is. So first thing is, let's all be very aware when we go outside and we bring our dogs in, and especially if you've rescued a dog from the Deep South or Texas or that area. Now, other than this past week, Texas doesn't see a whole lot of snow and ice. Well, they saw a whole lot of snow and ice now. But normally the dogs who come from the shelters and rescues around the country, those dogs will end up coming up, most of them come up to the Northeast where the weather is very different. Most of these dogs aren't acclimated to cold and snow and the sleet and wind and all that, because it doesn't get that cold in Georgia and the Deep South and Louisiana and Texas. So the first thing is, if you have a dog who you've recently adopted and you're coming in, let's say you got the dog in the summer and you've got your shelter dog and you did a great thing by rescuing and adopting, and you've got your shelter dog coming up to, let's say, upstate New York, where it's very cold sometimes, actually, most of the time, and it's snowy and it's icy. Be aware that your dog isn't used to that, so acclimate him to that slowly. Don't take him out and throw him out into a, you know, snowbank. Take him out when it's flurrying so he can start seeing where the snow is coming from, so he can understand what's going on, so he's not afraid of it. And don't stare at your dog. Walk. Go like you're going somewhere. There's a sale on Fendi bags. There's a sale on baseball. There's a sale on Giants tickets, or there's a sale on Cowboys tickets, or there's a sale on any tickets you could possibly want to buy. And it's all the way down the end of the block. Go toward the sale instead of dragging your dog around. Remember, we don't want to drag our dogs around. Our dogs trust us, and if they don't trust us, they certainly need to trust us. So be really aware of the fact that your dog is probably, if it came from the deep south and you've just recently rescued it, it's probably going to have no clue whatsoever what it's supposed to do in snow or ice. Now, the same thing, some of the dogs that aren't used to the cold weather may have a lot of feathering around the bottom of their toes and feet. So you might want to get the dog, before you have them all soaking wet, get them used to coming in and standing on a towel for a minute, and then you can gently rub or wipe off the things on there. There's actually a kind of a strange gadget that I heard advertised on one of my shows, and I don't know how it works, but it sounds like a great idea. But I think just a simple washcloth with a little bit of warm water would be fine. Try to use natural or organic, non-chemical, non-artificial cleaning products on your floor and obviously outside. So when the dog comes in from outside, you can either rinse or wipe off as best you can the feet of the dog, not just the black pads, because that's not really the part that typically dogs have issues with. The part of the foot that dogs have issues with is the part that's up between the toes. So it doesn't mean that they'll never have a problem with the pad of their feet. But typically you'll see the dogs will have kind of a piece of salt or some sand will kind of get up all the way up into the toes. So when you clean the toes, try to clean the upper part. So actually spread the toes out gently, and you'll see it's like whiter. It's a lighter color. You'll see a different color. It'll be more pinkish or whitish. And as you are cleaning off the feet, make sure you get the dog used to doing this all the time. Don't be rough. Be very gentle with your dog. Remember, he's got to trust you. There are too many people who call themselves trainers and call themselves behaviorists or canine experts or whatever you have, where they're very rough. And they're very demanding, and they're very, like, throw the dog on the ground because it looked the wrong way. That's not how dogs behave. And you don't know what might trigger your rescue dog because you haven't had him forever. So that's the first 4 months that you have your dog is really critical for you to build trust with him, to build that relationship. And the first 2 months is actually called the honeymoon period. So please stay tuned because we have a wonderful guest beginning in the second segment who is going to tell us a little bit about what she loves to do with dogs. And we're going to talk a little bit more about care for your dog and his feet in a moment on From Shelter Dog to Service Dog.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog. Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, we were just talking about getting our dogs healthy and keeping our dogs ready to go out with us without injuries and without sickness and illness or poisonings because of all the things they're exposed to in the Northeast. And we were talking also about what you should do with your shelter dog. Of course, a dog from a breeder, and it's a young dog, and it's never been exposed because it was a puppy, and it's exposed now for the first time to, you know, all kinds of things that it's not used to. But that's okay because it's still a young dog. Well, when we bring dogs from one location, one climate to another, sometimes we can create issues. So what would you do if your dog has some kind of seasonal allergy? Well, if a dog goes from north to south, they tend to have more seasonal allergies. If a dog comes from, let's say, the United States to Japan, Japan is full of, they have so many allergies, and vice versa. When dogs go from one climate or one location, I'm not talking from, you know, New York City to New Jersey, we're talking, you know, going from a different climactic border and a different temperature area, for those regions, they do have differences. Now, even one of the things that happens with a lot of dogs that we get at merlinskids.org and unitedcanineprofessionals.com, a lot of the dogs we get are from Georgia, or they're from the Carolinas, they're from Louisiana, they're from Texas, and even Arizona. So most of the dogs that we get are shelter dogs who may have not even lived in a home. That is a big problem. So sometimes when you have your dog and you're going to be bringing your dog into your home, because obviously you live in, you know, Massachusetts or you live in Connecticut, it gets pretty chilly up there, or Maine, or, I mean, you might as well say Alaska for Vermont. That's pretty cold up there. So if we're able to understand why the dog is acting the way it's acting, then we can fix the behavior. So let's say you get your shelter dog, you adopt it in New Jersey or in Connecticut or in wherever, Massachusetts, and as you get this dog, the dog is, let's say it's having accidents in the house. Now, it could be because of dominance, and we certainly speak about that, that marking territory is certainly a sign of dominance in some dogs, but it could also be a really honest mistake that the dog just doesn't understand that it's supposed to have, you know, its potty time outside, not inside, because that dog may never have been inside. That dog may have been born under a trailer, and it might have lived outside. It might have been one of those outside dogs, and it might have run away. We don't know, but whatever it is, we have to make sure that we're giving the dog the best care and the best understanding so that we can teach the dog what we expect. Don't get mad at your dog. He's just a dog. He doesn't understand what you're trying to teach him. But try to teach him in the way we teach you to teach. Natural canine behavior rehabilitation. It's according to the way that dogs think. Nobody created the way dogs think. If you're smart, you study dogs. And I know from studying dogs for my whole life, since I was about 7 years old and had my first dog, and I was always the go-to gal with the sick squirrel or the sick chipmunk somebody found or the bird that flew into somebody's kitchen window or the horse or the dog. I was always that go-to girl. And a lot of people out there are that kid. You are like what I was, where we were going out and any animal, it didn't matter what it was, it was our friend. So if you're one of those people, you might want to join our team at unitedcanineprofessionals.com. You might even want to learn how to train service dogs or therapy dogs or cancer detection dogs, which we've been doing for quite some time. And you might want to do that and call us at 855-4-K9-PROS. 855, the number 4K9PROS, or 855-HI-WYATT to find out more. Or you can go to our website, because we're always looking for people who understand and want to learn more and more and more about why dogs do what they do and how they think. And one of those amazing people who has been with us now for several years, happens to be on the line right now. She's got some amazing things that she's going to share with us today. Becca Steinbach, United Canine Professional and amazing young lady, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So, Becca, are you braving that disgusting traffic with the ice and snow, and you're still able to make it to help everybody on the East Coast here today and around the country and around the world? So, Becca, tell us a little bit about what you do and what your desires are and kind of a little bit more about what it is to be a natural canine behaviorist.
Sure. Well, I joined a few years ago, and mainly because my dogs were having issues. And we were great owners that took our dogs to obedience training every time. But it never was enough. And so I started looking around to see what else I could do and ended up meeting Janice. And so that's where everything began, and I loved it because it was a way to reach dogs that didn't require cookies, choke collars, prong collars, clickers, not even words even. And so we really reached the dogs in a way that they get, and that was a really cool thing for me to see and then learn to do. So it's just been a really great experience, you know, helping all these dogs with owners that are just with no hope left. They just don't know what to do. And then we give them hope, and we give them practically a brand new dog because this dog finally understands what we wanted from them. And now, you know, after a session or two and a few months later, they have a practically, if not perfect, dog.
That is true, and it's funny because, you know, we know this, and people, it's funny, when we go into a client, and I do usually three classes a day pretty much every day. Sometimes I do two and try to take a little break, but, you know, I get these phone calls from people, and I know you have too, Becca. I had a phone call today from a very nice lady up in Massachusetts, which, you know, from New Jersey, I don't love to go up that far, and we do have people covering Connecticut, Massachusetts, but this is what we call like a level 3+ dog. It's a Cane Corso, which is a large, very aggressive dog, typically very dominant. And one of the problems is that this poor dog has had everybody from those people who throw bean bags with chains in them that speak like, you know, oh, good day, mate, those people. But we won't mention names. And also, they had a number of obedience trainers and people claiming to be behaviorists and all kinds of things. And meanwhile, the dog has gotten worse and worse and worse. And the more she shook the penny can and squirted the dog with the bottle, with the citronella spray, and the more she tried, the worse the dog is getting. And that's unfortunate because you've got a 100-pound dog who is now biting everybody. And two veterinarians told her to euthanize the dog. The one said, oh, it could happen in 4 years. The dog will just turn on you in your sleep and kill you. I mean, veterinarians, and we've spoken about this, they don't really study behavior. So, you know, United Canine Professionals, we specialize in fixing dogs that nobody else knows what to do with. Because you know what? They're dogs. And dogs do what dogs do because they're dogs. And if you hang on for a brief moment, we will be right back with more from Shelter Dog to Service Dog.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others. Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And today's amazing guest is Miss Becca Steinbach, who is in the Baltimore and D.C. area. She's in Maryland. She's all over the place. Beck has been telling us a little bit about what she's done and how she found United Canine Professionals and why she loves being a part of it. But, you know, the dog I was telling everybody about, the Cane Corso, you know, we hear this. This is just so common. People have a dog for 2 or 3 months, and, you know, they don't know what happened to it before. They don't know where it was from. They don't know where it lived. You hear a story. People had to move. The baby was allergic. Come on. The dog had a behavioral issue, and that's why somebody dumped the dog. If it were the perfect dog, and we've talked about this before, I guarantee that if I needed to find a home for Wyatt, Wispity Bunny Dog, Savannah, Sedona, Coda Puppy, Prince, and, you know, all my others, Kayla, Anakin, you know, Zoe, all my dogs, Lexi, Charlie, you know, Sunka, all my dogs, and I got more than that, I just can't even remember, Fallon, and Smand, I guarantee I would have every single dog. If I put one post on Facebook, every dog would be gone in 5 minutes. Why? Because my dogs are the best dogs in the world. Like Becca's dog. Becca's dogs now, they're the best dogs in the world. So who's not going to want a great dog? The reason dogs wind up in the shelter is somebody either did wrong by them or didn't want them because they had a behavioral issue. And, of course, they're not going to say, like the lady with the Cane Corso that called me today from Massachusetts. She's not, you know, people aren't going to say, oh, yeah, well, yeah, this dog can get really aggressive, and, you know, you definitely want to, you know, not, you know, have this dog because, you know, it's really aggressive. So, yeah, you take the dog, because if somebody said that, the dogs would never get adopted. And, unfortunately, people play games. And, you know, they lie. I've seen people slap a vest on a dog, and we've all heard about this, these fraudulent people who are claiming to train service dogs. God, there are so many of them. I know a couple personally who claim to train service dogs, and they claim to take them from shelters, and, like, in a week they place them. Come on. You got to get through the honeymoon period of 2 months. You've got to get through 4 to 6 months minimum of making sure that dog is perfect in every situation and having someone who's qualified, not someone who just has a big mouth, but somebody who actually has a big resume, a legit resume. That's another problem. So, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you know, that's, oh, it's a shelter dog. That's why it's misbehaving. No, it's a shelter dog. It started out as somebody's pet. So we at United Canine Professionals and Merlin's Kids want to educate the public that a lot of these dogs truly are the best dog in the world. But they had owners who were inept, or for the lack of a better phrase, you can't fix stupid. And I just had somebody, you know, not long ago this afternoon call me. I want to get a Christmas puppy. I want to get a Rhodesian Ridgeback for a Christmas puppy. I said, I won't even breed one that's going to be ready for Christmas, because I'm not going to sell a dog to somebody who's thinking, I want a Christmas puppy. You sit on my list for 6 months or a year and a half, and don't go and decide you're going to go get, you know, some other breed because you can't get one of the Ridgebacks. If you want a dog, if you're going to give it a great home, then spend your time. You know, Becca, I do want you to mention in a little bit about the, there was a dog that a close friend of yours had, and you don't have to mention who it was, but that he rescued a dog from the shelter and didn't really ask for your help with it. So if you could maybe explain what happened and how that could have been avoided had he thought about it and maybe contacted you first instead of after. Would you mind telling us about that story, changing the names to keep everybody innocent?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I was contacted about by a friend for getting a dog, and I had offered, you know, a few of my insights, one of which being that, you know, he should be looking for a relatively calm dog given his situation. And even though I gave some advice, it wasn't adhered to. And so he ended up with a really sweet dog, but full of issues. This dog went from 0 to 80 in about 2 seconds. And that meant that she would be calm 1 second, and then 2 seconds later, she would be biting you. All sorts of crazy. And so after a few days, this dog became a little bit too much for my friend to handle. And so, of course, he calls me again. And I'm sitting there, you know, hey, if you had just let me help you with this dog beforehand, you would have gotten one that would have been suited perfectly to your needs. Instead, what he looked for was the fact that this dog was so energetic, full of energy. And that, from a shelter, sometimes is not necessarily the best thing for certain people, and especially my friend. He had a busy schedule, not a lot of time to devote to deal with a high-energy dog. And so he still thought that that would be the wisest choice, and so we started to go through, you know, help. And things were getting better. The dog started to learn to respect certain rules. Very, very slow to back down, though. It was just that type of dog. And things were going well. But unfortunately, there were a bunch of complications outside of the dog within my friend's life. And it became too dangerous to rehabilitate in the short amount of time that he had. And so, unfortunately, this dog had to be returned. Luckily, though, it is a no-kill shelter, so the dog will not leave that place until it has another home. But it's just a good example of, you know, first of all, before you go to a shelter, figure out what kind of dog would suit your lifestyle, and then look for that kind of dog, that kind of energy that it encompasses, before you pick one out. Spend some time with it. Because this is a dog's life here, and, you know, you're giving an opportunity to save it, but it's not going to do much good if you choose one that isn't suited for your lifestyle and then end up having to give it up because you bit off more than you can chew, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, Becca, that's so true, and so many people do that. And this very nice lady from the Northeast I was just telling you about, she's the same thing. She's, you know, she had just lost her dog and, you know, had lost her job, and her energy was just so withdrawn and sad. So here you have this big, dominant male dog, and comes in, and he's like, I'll take care of you. And, you know, that is such an important thing. Actually, we're going to be putting on our website, probably around the first of the year, we're going to put a little questionnaire, a chart, and it will have some questions for you to ask the shelter or ask the breeder about the things that the dog needs, so that if people want to rescue, that's great. We urge you to rescue. And this coming from a breeder of Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgebacks, I'm telling you, I rescue more than I've ever bred. I've rescued thousands of dogs, literally, for our programs and for my clients. But I breed to better my breed. I don't breed to make more, and I certainly would never breed to make mixed breeds, because those are just Frankenstein experiments. You don't know what you're getting, and it's not the dog's fault. It's not that I don't like the dogs or what's produced. It's just a matter of, unfortunately, you know, the dogs are the ones who pay, either behaviorally or genetically or, you know, other issues. So we're going to talk more about that, and we're going to talk more with Becca. So stay tuned for the next portion of From Shelter Dog to Service Dog.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog. Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, we're continuing on and talking a little bit today with Becca Steinbach, who is in the Baltimore area. If you need help with your dog, we have people in 37 states and Bulgaria, And we have UK and Ireland coming aboard, France and Australia. I mean, we are just international, and it's just wonderful. We are so excited. Well, one of the things that we're talking about is getting the appropriate dog. And we're going to go through, Becca and I are going to go through a little bit of a checklist of things that you need to make sure. Well, obviously, first thing is the size of the dog. So if you're looking, if you live in a little tiny apartment, that doesn't mean that you need to have a Chihuahua. You can, but don't get a 200-pound Great Dane or Mastiff if you're going to be, you know, inactive. Not that he's going to have a high level of activity, but you want the dog to be able to have physical activity. I've heard people say, dogs don't need exercise. I don't look like I exercise, do I? Well, we don't care about you. You're a person. We care about the dog, and yes, dogs need activity. It's not per se exercise in its strictest sense, but if anybody who knows me, if you've seen me on the phone, normally I'm pacing. I just walk. I have a lot of energy, and that's why I'm in really great shape, because I walk around a lot. Do I exercise? Probably not, unless, well, I mean, I've ridden 8 or 9 horses a day for most of my life, so certainly that was exercise, but I didn't think of it as exercise. I wasn't going to the gym. I was jumping on one of my Lipizzan horses or my Thoroughbreds or my Arabians. So exercise is a funny kind of way of thinking of it, but look at a dog, like Becca said, who has an activity level who kind of matches yours. If you have a very young baby, don't pick a crazy high energy like a Border Collie or a Sheltie or something that's going to be zipping around. And by the way, when your baby gets older, guess what? The Border Collie or the Sheltie or the Australian Cattle Dog or the Australian Shepherd, you know, guess what they're going to be doing? They're going to be nipping at your kids. So you got to teach them from the beginning not to do that. So that's one of the important things. Becca already said, make sure you have a dog who has his activity level matches your own. Obviously, the size of the dog, as we were discussing. Size of the dog is very important to make sure that you can handle the dog. Don't, if you're 80 years old, why do you need to go get a big 100-pound puppy, that like some mastiff that's going to drag you down the road? Get a nice moderate-sized dog. You know, it's funny. There are more moderate-sized dogs than there are big dogs or little dogs. They're probably the most common dogs in the shelter are the medium-sized dogs. So you'll have a great, great selection of dogs. But you get the people who want a little pocket dog, and certainly a lot of them have issues. Then you get the people who want, I want a big manly man dog. I want a large dog. So, you know, there are so many dogs. Look at the temperament, because coming from me with, I don't even know how many Ridgebacks I have and my shelter and rescue dogs, but probably 30-plus just in my home and farm. If I had 30 of any other breed, like if I had 30 German Shepherds or 30 Rottweilers or 30 pretty much anything, I would have such disasters. Other than, you know, when you have somebody who's not a good person who's trying to, you know, boss your dogs around or try to stir up problems, you know, my dogs are really good. I have a bunch of dogs. They're all together. They love each other. If they, you know, tussle over something, like a new dog coming in, my pack corrects them, and I'll correct them. Hey, knucklehead, you can't do that here. Oh, okay, sorry, I won't do that. But unfortunately, I think a lot of people want, especially younger guys, want a tough dog. And that may not be the best choice, because if you want a big, tough, scary dog, but you might get married someday and have kids, remember, the dog's going to live hopefully 10 to 15 years. Your dog is probably going to be with your kids someday. So you might not want to get a dog who likes to attack little animals, because guess what your little baby's going to look like? Set your dog up for success, not for failure. We trademarked that phrase because it's that important to us. Set your dog up to succeed. Set him up so he's going to win the game. Don't set him up to lose the game. So, Becca, we've gone over the size of the dog. We've gone over the energy level of the dog. Can you give us maybe a couple of other things that might be important for the dog, for the new person looking to get a shelter dog?
Well, I would say that just looking at perhaps the fur type, you know, if you're if you're allergic, you're probably going to want something of a poodle type or some one of those curly-coated dogs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if you want one that doesn't want to shed, you know?
Absolutely. You know, that's a really good point. Because if you think about it, let's say that the person who turned in the dog and that person turned in the dog and said, you know, my baby's allergic to him, which I don't know if I believe that, but that more is like my wife is sick of taking care of the dog and the baby. That's usually what it means. Or the dog is peeing near where the baby's toys are or doing something bad relating to the baby. But the fur type is an excellent consideration. If you live in, let's say you're taking a dog from the deep south, which for some reason most of them seem to be more short hair, short-haired dogs don't always mean that the hair is hypoallergenic. The Ridgebacks don't have an undercoat. They have a very silky but stiff one coat. So you might want to consider, like Becca said, getting the coat type that is something you're not allergic to. And if you do know of somebody who in your family who might be allergic, you might want to have a dog find a poodle mix or a Bichon mix or Maltese. They don't really shed a lot or have allergic kind of issues with their fur. But that's awesome. And I know the other thing, that we always talk about is cost. Becca, do you have any thoughts on how much food costs and how much vet costs and even like common things of, feeding a 100-pound dog versus feeding a 10-pound dog? You have two Goldens, I know. And if you think about how many little dogs could you feed for your two Goldens?
Plenty of little dogs, probably two or three for each of my Goldens. cost, it goes from food to vet annual visits to the unexpected ones by the oopsies or the dog is sick. Getting a good food, that's very important to keep the health of the dog. That's going to cost, anywhere from $30 to $50 for a 50-pound bag. So you have to weigh in those costs, and a medium-sized dog tends to eat about two to three cups a day. If you had a large dog, though, you're looking at 4 cups probably. So depending on the size of the dog, you're going to go through higher costs. Dogs sometimes cost more at vets just for being larger, especially if you plan on boarding them. Pet sitting is also another cost. If you ever plan on traveling to places that you can't take your dog with, you either have to choose to board them or hire a pet sitter. So there's definitely a lot of different costs to look at, and not just monetary costs, but also your time. Always remember that a dog is another life, and when you're going on your daily excursions, even errands, work, you're going to have to look at the timetable. You don't want to leave your dog alone for too long. Being home alone 8 to 10 hours a day just isn't a great life. So that can even cost more monetary costs by hiring a dog walker or something like that. So you're going to need to weigh in, what costs you're going to look at, and that will also help determine what size of a dog you want. Because if you can't really afford the large vet bills and the large dog boarding and the large amount of quantity of food with a large dog, you're going to want to look at a smaller dog.
Awesome. And hopefully Becca will come back with our final segment on From Shelter Dog to Service Dog in a moment.
Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children. Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And, of course, Wyatt, who's laying quietly on the floor, kissing my foot because he's not a man, so he's really the best creature on the planet. Becca was coming from a great viewpoint of cost of dogs. And, you don't really realized how expensive dogs can be. I've seen estimates of between $800 and $1,200 a year, including vet bills, food, vitamins, and, you know, the basic cost of having a dog. So it can be very expensive. It can easily be $50 to $100 per month. Make sure that if you are going to rescue a dog, that you can give him or her what he needs. And think about the cost. Think about even the expenses like, you know, about grooming. If you're going to get something like a little Shih Tzu, a poodle, something like that, that has a longer coat that continues to grow, you know, you're going to have grooming bills. You're going to be paying $30, $40, $50, $60 a month to get the dog groomed every 4 weeks to keep the dog short, short-haired, and maybe a little more in the summer when you've got to puppy clip them all the time to keep them cool, versus something that's got a short, slick coat like a Ridgeback or most of the hounds. Actually, the hounds have typically, other than Afghan hounds and a couple of Salukis and Fluffies, they pretty much have a very short coat, very bristly, and other than greyhounds who do have a softer coat that tends to shed more, most of the hounds really, you know, have a great coat on them, and that you don't have to maintain them. We call them in the show ring, we call them the wash and wear dogs, because you literally do their toenails once a week for show, give them a bath every so often, and they're good to go. You don't have to do anything compared to like a Shih Tzu or a Pomeranian or, you know, Commodore. The Commodore, a friend of mine breeds those. They look like gigantic dust mops. But it can take up to a week for their dog to dry after they wash it. So consider that as well, because it can be very expensive, not just for the food and the care. And, you know, you buy the dog a little blanket, you know, the little chihuahua size one is $10. The one for Wyatt is like $70. So everything is a little more expensive. And, you know, you do also want to use, and this is to me the cheapest thing you can do for your dog, there's an amazing vitamin supplement that we use called Nuvet, Nuvet.com. You can just tell them Merlin's kids told you about the vitamins. Go on their website. It's an amazing vitamin. And to me, that has saved me more vet bills than anything else I've ever done, including using the organic food that I use. The thing is that the Nuvet really helps them. It prevents itching and allergies and hot spots. It prevents cataracts and will actually help to remove mild to moderate cataracts. So it's, you know, that's actually, I mean, what do they cost, 40, 50 cents a vitamin? But your dog will be healthier and you won't be in the vet all the time. And I use also the new joint. My Fallon had gotten injured when she was very young. Fallon is actually one of Wyatt's wives, we'll say. And she's at home, and I noticed, you know, it's getting into the winter, and she was getting a little achy and crotchety from where she had broken her front foot and her toe, which has, of course, you know, impacted her hind end just a bit. Well, I put her on three little new joint tablets about 3 or 4 days ago, and she was walking like a champ again. So, you know, to me, that's a really important thing, that I can afford to give my dogs the best of everything. I mean, I'll give my dogs everything before I get my own things. And that's what you should do. If you're selfless, not selfish, if you are a giver and not a narcissist, if you think that, you know, you want to do for others instead of see what they can do for you, then, you know, if you're going to get a dog, do the right thing the same way you would do that with your friends and your kids. Take care of them and give them the best of everything. So one of the things that I do want to touch on before we end today is I wanted to discuss the fact that many people who do adopt dogs give up on the dogs very quickly. Well, we have for until January 1st at United Canine Professionals, we have a special. If you get a dog and you rescue a dog for Christmas and you have any behavioral issues with this dog that you've rescued, and of course it'll have to be an approved rescue or shelter so that we know that the people there are teaching the dog the right thing the way United Canine Professionals teaches it, we have a special. So if you go to your shelter or rescue to adopt a dog And if they're not a participating member with United Canine Professionals and Wyatt's List, please tell them to get in touch with us, because if they do that, you will receive a discount coupon that is good on a behavioral session, lifetime guarantee, to help your dog. You know, that's a big thing. You'll get local trainers, and we don't begrudge any kind of trainers, because training is fun. I have rally obedience titles on a few of my dogs. I don't even know how to do it. All I know is my dogs follow me everywhere. If I stop, they know, well, it's going to be a minute, I better sit. If I stop for a few seconds, they lay down because they know mom's going to be talking a while. And, you know, the great thing about that is that, you know, obedience is fun. You know, it's a fun thing. Wyatt's brother has all kinds of, I can't even pronounce all the titles he's got. He's got like 30 letters after his name, which is amazing, and it's a lot of hard work. But if you have a dog who has a behavioral issue and you're trying to make him sit, or you're trying to click at him to tell him, oh, look at me, oh, don't, you're growling at the dog, click, look at me, oh, good, now I'll give you the reward for looking at me. You just, without realizing it, you inadvertently have just rewarded the dog for growling. You're not thinking like a dog. We are behaviorists. We're always looking for like-minded individuals, people who want to help dogs. Most people will not get rid of a dog and give it up to a shelter because the dog won't sit. They will, however, get rid of a dog that's urinating all over their house, that has a behavioral issue. They will, however, when a dog is nipping or biting or jumping or barking incessantly and getting them kicked out of their townhouse or their condo, they will contact the rescue shelter to get rid of their dog. But I've never seen one person say, darn, my dog won't sit when I tell him I want to get rid of him and get a new one. So if you have a behavioral issue with your dog, you got to fix it behaviorally. I mean, if you were upset and I told you to sit down, would you still be upset? Yeah, well, you might be sitting down, but chances are you wouldn't even sit down. So, you know, Becca, I wanted to just, in summing up today, for the end of our show, you know, I just wanted to go over something quickly. What would you say, I'm going to give my answer and then I want you to give a brief answer as well if you would. What would you say is the most important thing for anybody to do when they're considering getting a dog? And I'm going to tell you what I think too. So I think the most important thing is getting everybody in the family on board, so that everybody in the family, including mom, who's going to be sitting with the dog most of the time, everybody's on board and discussing it with the family to making sure. So you're making sure that mom says, okay, let's do a dog, and what size and type it is. To me, that's the most important, but I have a feeling you have something else. What do you think is something you want to leave our listeners with for advice on getting a new dog?
Well, Janice, I would wholeheartedly agree with you there. I would also say that look inside yourself and make sure that you're 100% ready. A lot of us look to finding a new dog to fill in that hole after a previous dog has passed. Make sure that you are ready, that your emotions are set, that you're ready to give this dog the best life. You know, if we're not completely okay with ourselves and completely prepared to have a new addition in our family, then that dog is going to be set up for failure and potential behavioral problems. So make sure that you're ready before even going to your family or your roommates or whoever you're living with, that you're ready. So make sure you're ready, and then make sure everyone else is ready.
That's awesome, Becca. I think that's great advice. So, you know, we're going to unfortunately have to end this tete-a-tete for the day, but we definitely want to wish everybody a happy, healthy week. We will have our Christmas show, oh my goodness, next week. I can't even believe it. We're already almost at Christmas. And I'm also going to announce something. Everybody make sure you check on Facebook on our Merlin's Kids and United Canine Professionals, and also check on our websites, unitedcanineprofessionals.com and merlinskids.org, for some amazing news. You won't believe what we've got going on, and you won't believe what TV program we're going to be on. And we will let everybody know probably next week, probably Monday, so make sure you keep in touch. And take care of yourselves. Take good care of your dogs. Becca, thank you for being with us, and we will talk to you next week on From Shelter Dog to Service Dog.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.